So it's the time of the year when the state's child minding service, or school as it's otherwise known, is closed. The weather has been quite good, so at least the kids have been able to get outside the house. But as any parent will tell you, summer is hard to keep little ones entertained. An opportunity not lost on many business people. Let's talk to those making hay while the sun shines. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business Podcast with CompuB. Apple technology and solutions for your business. CompuB.com.
I don't know about you, but Photo Wildlife Park was a big part of my childhood. It was a lot closer than Dublin Zoo, and you still got to see monkeys and giraffes. But now, after a pretty big expansion and the addition of some exotic new animals, Photo has really come into its own. And a lot of it is with thanks to the vision of one man, Park Director Sean McHugh. I went down to Photo to meet with him in his rather unique office. Sean McHugh, you have one hell of a view through your window here, because the cheetahs can walk right up, can they?
Right up behind you there, so you better be careful.
I won't turn my back too much on them. Speaking of cheetahs, they are the latest new additions here. How many were born in the last few weeks?
We had four cubs born to one of our females, Nimpy. This is our third litter. So we're very proud of them. They're doing very well, and they've been a real hit with the public because the mother is really relaxed. She comes forward right up to the front of the pen and very visible to the public. While our tiger cub is a little bit more nervous and getting used to it.
Reluctant. But the fact that the tiger cub has been born here, that is very significant for the development of the wildlife park, that you're now in that space as opposed to, you know, having cheetahs and monkeys and others, but you have success in breeding them.
Yeah, that whole process started back in 2012 when we started drawing up plans for our new area of land that we purchased about 10 years previous. So it was getting the plans and planning permission, etc. With that, we eventually, the other part then was the funding. We had applied for Fáilte Ireland grants, etc. And we thought we were in with a good chance there. Didn't happen. So we had to develop it in phases. We decided we'd start first with the tiger. That took about a little over a year to do, because during the development of the enclosure, we hit some archaeology.
Yes, never good. Nice that it's there. What did you find again?
A small encampment. It's about 3,500 years old. Interesting in that it's just above the waterline, that one in 200 year event that of flooding, that we expect the waterline for that in the harbour. So it's 3,500 years ago, they knew exactly where to build.
Yeah.
Unlike our modern.
Exactly. We wouldn't have learned that much. But the tiger enclosure opened. You were here, if I'm not mistaken, very early on in the Photo project, weren't you?
Yeah, I think it was literally the first animal down here.
You were the first animal. But you left in the intervening period.
Yeah, I was here from... I came down in 1982 was the park manager there at that stage. Got the park, was involved in the opening of the park, getting the animals in, etc., with Terry Murphy of Dublin Zoo. And then the end of 1995, I moved to the Middle East to work with a private development there that a sheikh was. He had an interest in animals, particularly cheetahs. So that sort of sparked my interest. And I went there for about 15 years and then came back in 2010.
How much had the park changed in that intervening period, that 15 years where you were gone?
Sadly, very little. They had purchased the extra land during that period, the extra 27.5 acres, and that was planted up. So, but the public weren't in there, but had left the opportunity then to start to develop with a slightly mature site, which was very good. But at that stage, the park didn't have the finances to develop anything.
It's a curious one, because you have a steady flow of visitors all year round, but there are the peaks. There are the bank holiday weekends, the summer months. Is it difficult to try and predict from a business point of view how busy you're going to be in an average year. Maybe it's going to rain a lot. Maybe people are going to stay away. That means you can't necessarily plan too far.
There are lots of events and parameters that can change for us. The weather is our big problem. We're a very weather-dependent visitor attraction. So we have almost 50% of our visitor numbers are between the first week in June to the last week in August.
So we're very much at the height of the season now.
And of those, the 2 weeks in July and the first 2 weeks in August is literally the boom time for us. And if we had hit bad weather during that period or at bank holiday weekends in at Easter or May and the August bank holiday weekend, they can affect our numbers. Thankfully, with the development, it's the recent developments, we've gone from about 360,000 people in 2010 to 465,000 last year.
This is an unusual business insofar as that it's a not-for-profit, which means that you have to make enough money that you reinvest and that you keep the staff employed and that everything stays above water, but you can't make too much money. Is it a delicate balance, or is it something you don't have to worry about too much given the nature of the industry?
We certainly don't have to worry about too much money. It's getting the cash flow in is our biggest dependency. We're 98% dependent on what we take in from our gate receipts, and in the last few years we because of the increased numbers, we have had quite a strong positive cash flow, which has allowed us to do these developments along with bank borrowings as well. So at the moment we have a borrowings of about 1.3 million. So we are, servicing those loans, but it hampers our future development. We have a lot of more things that we want to change and do and alter within the park over the next 5 to 7 years.
I'm watching out through the window here, watching for the cheetahs behind me, but also at the people coming through. It's families with kids, families with kids. Is that a good or a bad thing that is the main driver of people through the gates here?
The majority is family and kids, and we would be the premier in the south of Ireland. We'd be the premier family tourist attraction, but we do get a lot of groups. We do get a lot of couples, either younger couples or people who have retired and come along and visit the park. So but they. They tend to come more through the outer part of the season, so in May, June, September, October.
You welcome them then, because that's your quieter time. You welcome anyone through the gates. And in terms of the local economy, when you've all these visitors coming in, that brings money not just to Fota. If you say people are coming specifically for here, that means the rest of the neighbours benefit as well.
Yeah, and the surveys in that we've been doing, accommodation, what they eat, drink, what they spend on shopping, etc. The visitors that are in the area, it brings in somewhere around 150 million to the local economy annually. And as I said earlier, the 30% of those people are actually coming to visit Fota. That's their interest in being in the area. So we would directly bring into the economy of about 50 million if you take that number. So it's growing, and that's not just the developments that we do in directly within the park. That's what the public that come here spend in the local economy.
When you look back on your career here, Sean, as you said, you were the first animal here. You're now the boss. Are you proud of what's been achieved? Because there was times when, Fota was always there, but then it kind of didn't do much for a while. But are you proud of where it's at now?
Yes, but we know we have to achieve a lot more. When the park first started, it only opened for 7 months of the year. It closed in the end of October and reopened in April. Now it's an all-year-round attraction. The other big thing is the visitors that come here. We know, you know, we've done surveys over the last 5-6 years, and they consistently come back that about 30% that visit, the prime reason for coming to the Cork region is to come here.
And your biggest competitor, if you were to have one, is Dublin Zoo, where it's, you know, biggest visitor attraction in the country. Is there a healthy rivalry? Do you feel like you're able to challenge them more now than you would have in previous years?
We're actually part of the same organisation.
Don't give me that. There's always bound to be a bit of rivalry.
There is always rivalry between Cork and Dublin. It doesn't matter if it's on the football field or it's in any industry. There'll always be that rebel and attitude to Cork that we want to be better. In many ways, we are better in terms of our environments that we have here. For our animals are much larger and bigger, and we're growing in visitor numbers. So our experience here that most people will tell you is better than they get in Dublin. We don't have the same number of animals, but we still have, you know,
it's easier to get around photo. That's my big takeaway from this. Out of all the animals you have here now, how many species have you got actually on the park at the moment?
We have individuals, we have over 1,000. You know, that includes fish, and you know that we have a tropical area. We have about 120 species.
120 species. Out of all of them, of all the experience you've had over the years, do you have a favourite? You must have one animal that you'd like more than the others.
It changes.
It changes depending on experience directly with them. Yeah.
I suppose to ultimately over the period of 35 years the park has been open, the cheetahs have been central to that. So as a species, cheetahs would have been, you know, would remain my favorite, but there are certain animals, like our new Indian rhino, we've one particular character there, Jamil. He is, you know, he's one of my favorites. And I suppose our female tiger, and the male lion, Shanto. He's a particularly loud individual, let's say. Yeah.
Well, I went over to the lion enclosure the last time I was here, and the glass on the inside, and I remember just noting how there were muddy paw prints all the way down the inside, thinking, I wonder what it was like when he was attacking the glass, or at least playing with you to pretend he was attacking.
When the females are in heat, he doesn't like certain members of the animal staff or some people in the public he may recognise, because they're in here a number of times. He sees those as a threat to him, so he'll come over and charge at the glass. But the glass is 2-inch thick, so it's not.
Yeah, he won't. He can't do too much damage. Sean, we wish you the very best of luck, and hopefully the weather holds up for the rest of the season. Sean McKeown of Photo Wildlife Park, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Thank you.
The Red Business Podcast with CompuB Business. Improving productivity with the latest Apple technology. CompuB.com.
Now, if you're not heading to photo with your kids, you're probably looking to do something else with them. And one of the things you could do is send them to camps. And there are many that are operating right now across Cork City and County. So that's what we're going to talk about next here on Red Business. And with me is the Business Development Manager for LW Management, Mark McManus. Mark, how are you?
I'm great, thanks very much.
LW Management means nothing to anybody, but I suppose if we use the brand name, people will recognise it.
Yeah, we operate as Leisure World, and people would probably know our facilities. We have Leisure World Bishopstown, in the north side we have Leisure World Churchfield, we have Douglas Pool, Mahon Golf Course, and St Peter's Church on North Main Street. So we operate the leisure facilities on behalf of Cork City Council.
The idea of getting involved in camps, like previously Cork City Council, they ran 2 swimming pools, that was it. Then it started branching out wider. How important is this now as part of the business model for Leisure World?
Well, I think commercially within the leisure industry, children's activity camps of different nature have always been around, you know. But I suppose in terms of Leisure World delivering services to the community and to the public, children's activity camps, you know, children getting them active, allowing them to experience new activities is very important. And one of the key things that Leisure World tries very hard to do is offer opportunity and access to kids that may not get the opportunity and access otherwise. You know, so that's really important to us.
One of the things that always comes up is the cost of these things. They are kind of expensive. Where did you pitch yourselves in that model?
Yeah, they are expensive. I mean, when you compare it to childcare, which is expensive itself, it doesn't look too bad. I mean, when you look at the supervision that the children are getting and the duration, you know, typically we run our courses, our camps from 10 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's 6 hours a day, give or take. 5 days, that's 30 hours of childcare, if you want to look at it that way. When you compare it to that, it's not too expensive, but it is absolutely a substantial amount of money to come out of parents' pockets to pay for their kids to take part in an activity. You know?
Before we talk about the activities themselves, let's look at it from your side. What are the overheads? I mean, the cynic would say, well, you have the facilities, you have the pool, you have all of that, so therefore it doesn't cost you that much. They're making a good chunk of profit, but it's not just having the facilities, is it?
Yeah. No, there's obviously costs associated with it. The facilities are there, but the largest cost associated with the camps primarily is the staff. And over the last number of years, understandably, the costs of staff and training of staff, more importantly, and implementing policy and procedure has greatly increased. I mean, from simple things like all staff having to be Garda vetted, that requires additional resources and additional costs as well. But more importantly as well, the recent legislation with Children's First legislation, which is all to do with child protection, all staff now need to be trained in this and updated, and there's a lot of policies, procedures and training to increase staff awareness. And staff who apply for these roles come with lots of really good skills to work with kids, you know. But
there's a lot of formality behind that.
So there is a lot of cost behind in order just to be in a position to offer camps. And it is even with the voluntary groups, the scouts, etc., around the country, they're finding it harder and harder to maintain the services they're delivering because of these additional costs and resources and time requirements.
Traditionally, I suppose it's younger people, it's part-time workers, maybe students who'll come in who'll facilitate all of this. The most important thing is that kids have fun at these camps. You can't run them like Eastern European boot camps for athletes in the 80s. There has to be a bit of crack in them. So how important is that you get the right people so that the kids enjoy themselves and the staff enjoy themselves as well?
That's a really good point. The priority for us is split. You know, the most important thing for the parents and for the children is that they have a great time and they get something from it, and everyone is looking for more than just the child being minded. You know, the kids have to have an experience, but from our point of view, actually our number one priority is safety, you know, and we have to ensure that those children who are left with us now, there is a large onus in business now that we look after those children and we ensure they're safe, not only physically safe, but even the behaviour and everything that happens in that camp as well. So we are split, and you're right, the typical staff that we would hire are the fun-loving, active younger boys and girls at college, etc., looking for work in summer. We still have them because they bring that energy, that fun element and everything else. But we do need that element of the responsibility and the supervision and people to ensure that the environment is safe and that everybody who's in the camp is actually enjoying themselves and actually partaking and is actually having a really good social experience as well.
You have the advantage of having swimming pools as well, and that forms a big part of a lot of the activities that you do, isn't it?
Yeah, hugely. That's one of the big things that Leisure World has, is that we have the swimming, and it's the most looked forward to when we, all the kids, when they're asked what did they like about the camp, you know, it's typically is the swimming pool, the bouncy castle, we do the arts and crafts, we do the games and the sports activities on the AstroTurf pitches, but yes, the swimming pool is a huge thing. We have an inflatable there, they love sliding down on that, you know, we have games and toys for them to play in the pool, and the kids just love water, you know, and it's fantastic for them to have the opportunity to get swimming every day. If they were abroad in another country, a warmer climate than ours, they'd be out swimming every day in the pool, twice a day, three times a day, or never leave the pool. They get a certain element of that at the camp where they get to go there every day.
But be honest, how much do the staff, the full-time staff at Leisure World, look forward to when the camps are over and the noise level just goes back down to what it normally would be? There must be an element of anticipation for September.
Probably not, actually, because this is a great time for the staff because they get to go outside and they get to go out and take part in all these different mixes of activities, because we are always very busy delivering swimming lessons for school. So we have buses arriving non-stop from 9 in the morning.
Noisy all year round.
Noisy all the time. So this time of the year is great and the weather is good and we get to get outside with the kids as well.
If people want to sign their kids up, if there's any space left at this stage, how do they get in contact?
Yeah, I mean, you can check out our website, www.leisureworldcork.com, and you can check us online there. You can book in online, call any of the receptions, check us out on our social media as well, Facebook. And yeah, we still have some spaces there, and we'd be delighted to get more people signing up.
Okay, Mark McManus, Business Development Manager with Leisure World, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The Red Business Podcast with CompuB, building your business with premium Apple solutions. CompuB.com.
So from that summer camp to another type of summer camp, Mervyn Horgan is with me now. Mervyn, you bring with you my favourite toy in the world. I can't describe how much I love Lego, and you have an entire box of it here, so you've gone up in my estimation immediately. Tell us a little bit about what your camp is about.
Okay, so basically we use Lego education products to provide a fun experience through challenges, construction challenges. For boys and girls, we love when we get girls into our camp. I think it's very important to get a balance. And what we do is we have four different types of camps. We have junior engineers, senior engineers, then we have junior robotics, which we're going to try a little bit here today in a few minutes. And we also have senior robotics. So we set them challenges and daily tasks. So they're actually learning through Lego and having fun at the same time.
Now, to me, I would have been standing outside the door and queuing, but have kids changed? Are their expectations different now as to what it would have been when you used to throw a few blocks together and hope it looks like something you thought it was going to look like?
Believe it or believe it not, Lego is a timeless toy. And even though we're in a digital age, Lego have evolved and they now encompass the digital age. So you can do things like programming, coding, and marry them with a Lego education product. And then what happens is then your robot or your creation or your airplane will actually come to life. It'll move. It'll do things. It'll respond to your commands. So there is a gap, obviously, between the Lego brick and technology. But Lego have done very, very well to bridge that gap.
So you have an iPad in front of you, just to describe to the listeners. You have an iPad and a Googa, as I will describe it.
A Googa.
Yeah. So what does the iPad involve?
And the iPad basically, this is the latest from Lego Education products. And we do an awful lot of school workshops as well and birthday parties. We do festivals and events. And we work for some fairly big hitters now, Facebook, Google, mostly in Dublin, obviously. And last week we were in the Clonmel Junction Festival, and a couple of weeks' time we'll be in Ardmore Pattern Festival, which is great because it gives an experience to a market maybe we wouldn't reach. So this is Milo. Milo is the latest creation, and Milo, I suppose, is a step up on the Lego robotics that involves coding. Coding and programming, very important, very topical at the moment. This building that we're in uses all those technological advances to create employment, to generate business. So what we're offering then is just an opportunity to practice that at a basic level. Coding and computer science is also built to come on the primary curriculum and the senior cycle curriculum as well in a couple of years to create the skills needed for future generations.
So how does the iPad connect with Milo?
Milo, it's a Bluetooth connection.
Like you have on your phone.
Like you have on your phone, yeah. So simple enough, I'm just going to turn on Milo here. And you're going to press this button here for me.
Okay, this is very visual now, but I'm pressing a button on the iPad which says play. No, okay, so we'll do it again from press and play, right? So whenever you're ready to go.
So press play. Press play. This is just a line of code that's written for click and drag.
Okay, so here we go. Press play. Oh, Milo's moving.
And Milo just moved forward.
Oh, so you can just, so in other words, I that's programmed to make Milo move forward.
Yep.
And stop.
And stop.
You can do a load of different things. So you sit the kids down and they learn how these little individual blocks create a line of code that will tell Milo to do something or not do something.
Or not do something, yeah.
Okay.
And we can add, and this is the fun part when we add. So we'd start with a basic model. And the beauty about Lego as well is that all the children will reach the same model at the start. So we have a standard across the group of children. And they work at their own speed and their own pace. And then they can go and explore and create and experiment and do whatever they'd like.
From a business model point of view, there is an awful lot of summer camps. You've got Cool camps, you've got FAI camps, you've got the Leisure World camps we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. You have to come up with something different, something new. So Lego is your thing. How many kids are into it, and what kind of reaction do you get?
Yeah, well, I suppose just because there's Cool camps and science camps and other STEM camps around there, there's a place for everyone and everyone in the market. The summer camp business has gone through the roof in Ireland. Our business started during a recession, and it, believe it or believe it not, we're actually busier during a recession because people were under time constraints. Both parents may be under pressure to keep jobs and keep working and things like that. And so we grew substantially. We also realised that summer camps alone weren't enough. So the school offering, and we've also partnered with DCU in Dublin and Mary Eye in Limerick. So now they have Lego Innovation Studios, and they are training their teachers how to use Lego education products in the classroom. And we're all Lego education trained and certified trainers.
Is it a kind of a franchise then? Or
no, it's not a franchise. It's a privately owned business. I have a business partner in Dublin, Ross. So basically it's myself and my wife in Cork, and there's Ross and his wife Pauline in Dublin. And they're the core of it. And we actually link up with Lego education internationally. And it's mostly through the provision of Lego education services and events.
Now, when you get the kids doing this, the whole object is that they become creative, that they engineer to a certain degree. When you have the younger kids coming in, we've got the boys and girls. Sometimes the tradition would have said, oh, girls don't want to do this kind of thing. Have you noticed a change?
This year in our camps, we have about 35, between 35 and 45% of the attendees in the camps would be girls. We're often asked, do you do camps for girls? The answer is no. We don't do camps for boys either.
We do camps
for children. Yeah. And it's absolutely fantastic that we can provide those opportunities. The boys and girls that come into our camps, they are not conditioned to think or maybe have the same life skills of barriers to attending events or being told that they should or shouldn't do this. The children we have now have ample opportunities and a level playing field. And to be fair, I suppose it may be that the parents or the grandparents, the way they were raised or they were brought up, would, in some instances, might limit the thought process. But we love girls coming in. They're creative. Absolutely fantastic, the creative side the girls bring.
So how do people get involved with this particular camp? Do you still have space this summer?
We still have space this summer, yeah. We're in 8 locations in Cork. And we're in the Waterford, Kerry, Tipperary, Limerick and Clare. We've 13 locations nationwide. So you can check www.learnit.ie. All our locations are up there, or you can send an email to cork@learnit.ie.
So poor old Milo will be making an appearance at all those camps. He'll be wrecked, yeah.
And the old iPads do take a bit of a battering as well, you know. But no, it's fantastic. The coding is clicking and dragging, and we're delighted just to bring some satisfaction to the kids as well.
Mervyn, the website again, learnit.ie. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us in Red Business.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for this week's Red Business. Don't forget, redbusiness@redfm.ie if you want to get involved. My thanks to my guests and, of course, Niamh Hennessy, who helped put it all together. And we'll catch you on the next one.
The Red Business Podcast with CompuB. Building your business with premium Apple solutions. CompuB.com.